Welcome to season three, episode one. This is Chris Cast. I'm recording in a very unique way. I'm recording on my phone, so we'll see how this works out. I am just talking at my phone. I didn't bring my Sony recorder. My name's Chris Abraham. This is the September 11th edition of Chris Cast. First episode, new season. Thought I would start it with a bang. This is my memory of 9/11 and my sadness associated with 9/11. So we will start after the break. Hey there, this is Chris Cast, Season 3, Episode 1. My name's Chris Abraham. My memories I will talk about without reading. My previous episode was about my reading memories, and I'm going to go ahead and just wing it this time. So, I was staying at my ex-girlfriend's apartment because we shared a dog. I lived on Capitol Hill. She lived on DuPont in the Chandra Levy building. And so she allowed me to stay there because a friend named Isa was visiting from Germany. And Kathleen was living there. So there was no place to stay. And the only place, we didn't have an inflatable bed, and the sofa we had was a love seat, and I'm 6'3" and 230 pounds, I guess, at the time, 220 pounds. So Michelle let me stay with her, and when I woke up in the morning, she looked sick. She looked like she had a cold or a flu. So what I did is I grabbed Susie, our shared dog, ran downstairs, took her for a walk, and then went to a convenience store. Then I bought her Dayquil and Ribitussin, is that right? And Advil and aspirin and Tylenol and lots of drinks, soy milk, almond milk, rice milk, water, juice, and lots of Gatorade. Schlepped it home. Dropped Susie off with her and jumped into our beautiful taupe gray, taupe colored 1999 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo. And went from DuPont Circle to just along. I took it really easy. I went around the circle, grabbed Mass Avenue, went, you know, through that whole Florida Avenue thing. And then back on a Mass Avenue, and then through, you know, then past Union Station. But I remember right when we got around Union Station, right when we got around closer to D.C. near that area of North Capitol Street, NPR, which I always play, WAMU 88.5, started talking about airplanes hitting the World Trade Center, Twin Towers. I knew them as the Twin Towers at that time, and I was really fond of them. I remember I lived in New York City till I was six, then we moved to Hawaii, but I remember being amazed by that beautiful exoskeleton. I mean, that it was this amazing modernist, maybe. Was it modernist? I wouldn't say. It was the in that kind of Enlightenment period vibe, that vibe that is like that is manifested in mid-century modern. That's it. I mean, the thing was built in 1960, from 1966, you know, through when it was constructed. So It wasn't from the 30s or 40s, but it had that amazing... It seemed like every part of that amazing steel exoskeleton was gleaming. I don't know how they kept it so shiny, and it looked like it was sculptured. That's what I meant to say. All the lines were parallel all the way up the building, but when you approached the first couple floors and the entryway and so forth, they swooped away into various and sundry kind of beautiful, like one would maybe sculpt glass. It's that kind of thing. Look it up. See what the World Trade Center, see what the exoskeleton looked like. It was beautiful. It's beautiful. I mean, a lot of people don't like that building, but I think it's beautiful. And it was the epitome of modernism, the epitome of futurism at the time. It wasn't garish like the Gherkin or garish like whatever the hell replaced it. And it's not old worldly like the Empire State Building. And for whatever reason, New Yorkers only like brownstones and Chrysler buildings. I like the way that it was going, that it was more like Chicago than it was like New York City, right? New York City never left the 18th century. To say that it certainly isn't stepped foot out of the 19th century. It's still filled with oligarchs and robber barons and bankers and all the other cliches. It hasn't evolved at all in the last 20 years, in the last 100 years, in the last 300 years. I mean, it was the last place to have, you know, old black men in elevators and in bathrooms handing you towels and trying to sell you on perfume. It just seemed like that was a different era, right? That's to me a shameful era. It's not a proud infused era where you know, yes, they were jobs, but it always felt embarrassing to have people in bathrooms handing you towels and begging for change. Anyway, that is the first part. I heard about that on NPR and then started listening closely as I was in traffic in my air-conditioned car. What they said about that day, it was a beautiful day. It was a windows-down day, but you know, when you're in a nice... And it was a 1999... Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo lease. So remember, 1999 was only 2 years before 2001. So it was a really nice new truck and it was air conditioned. And so when I started hearing that coming out of the radio, I lowered my windows, all four of them, and looked around, and everybody was looking up and looking up at me and looking up at each other and ignoring the diesel truck and the motorcycle as they go by. It's so annoying. And nobody could believe it. So there weren't any traffic issues yet or anything like that. I mean, it was still something that was completely in the future. As I got to the various squares that break up 14th and A, not Lincoln, but a couple squares before that, I heard a big boom. And they were talking on the radio live on WAMU. They were talking about there possibly being a bombing at the State Department or a bombing at the White House. I never heard anything more about that. But when I heard a big boom, apparently that was the Pentagon. And so that traveled the distance from Pentagon, Northern Virginia, in Arlington, all the way to the 101 14th Street Southeast, so, or at least, you know, Capitol Hill, area right near Lincoln Park. I could hear it. So I get into the grotto, which is the name I had for my apartment, and Issa and Kate were there watching the 19-inch Sony cathode ray tube television. All we had was that, and VCR, and was it DVD player? I don't know, probably DVD player. No, Blu-ray, DVD player. And so we watched that. I don't know if did I have cable at that point, or were we using bunny ears, because we were underground. The grotto was a basement apartment. It was awesome, but it was still a basement apartment. And I don't know. We watched it. My mom had called. We didn't have ubiquitous cell phones, I don't believe. I don't even think. I must have had a cell phone. I think I had either had an Ericsson or a... did I have an Ericsson? Or did I have a Nokia? Anyway, and we watched, and they kept on looping it, and they kept on showing it. They kept on showing it again. They kept on talking about it. And I get online. I think at that point I probably have one of those clamshell iMacs or something. I think I had one bright orange or green. Green? Was it green? And I was online, I'm pretty sure. And I don't know where that first, like, reportership, the first writing that I was doing on the day of is, but it's got to be somewhere, maybe online somewhere, maybe one of these days if it hasn't been removed for content. But I was getting phone calls from around the world from my business partner in Germany. It was Beehive GmbH, and from Holland, Marlisa, and Saskia. Everybody around the world felt our pain. So then it comes into my head that I should go grab Michelle and Susie, the dog. So I jump into the truck, call her, tell her to get ready. She's like, why? I'm in bed. I'm tired. I'm sick. Oh, by the way, she was taking that day off because of her sniffles. So I said, well, you're on the 10th floor of the Chandra Levy building, and you have a giant entire side of your apartment is glass, and this might not be the end of terrorist attacks. They bombed the Pentagon. They might have nukes. They might have, who knows? Like, my brain always goes to nukes. So considering that we've always been threatened with dirty bombs and all this other kind of stuff, and since the courtyard in the middle of the Pentagon is in fact ground zero and target alpha of the Cold War, I just assumed that this could go thermonuclear. So I don't know what getting to the Capitol Hill would have done, but even if there were traditional explosions and so forth, I didn't want to get her stuck in there. So I made an executive decision, which is entirely manly for me, and I went ahead and grabbed her and drove across the city. And it was getting pretty crazy then. There were Hummers out on every corner. There were National Guard guys. There were Army men everywhere, every corner. Did get across the city. When I got to the Chandra Levy building, Michelle and Susie were there, all packed up. Grabbed them and struggled across the city again. Pretty sure I went Mass Ave both ways. We all sat around eating pizza and watching the TV, and the upstairs neighbor, we got together with her. We got together with her friends. We went to Al's Pizza, got pizza there. And that's how we spent our day. Isabel ended up going into the suburbs because she wanted to get the hell away from D.C. even further. Takes a German to know how bad things can get. And that was the day. That was the day. You know, we tracked the We tracked the errant flight that ended up crashing in Pennsylvania. We watched people jump from the World Trade Center. I don't know if it was that day or a couple days later when I went to Target or Walmart or whatever to get supplies. But by that time, things had been pretty much settled down. There definitely were jets overhead for the whole day, the rest of the day. But the next segment, I'm going to talk about how we single-handedly turned a world's goodwill against us through meanness, through stupidity, through pride, through whatever. We treated 9/11 as if an actual nation state waged war against us. And there was never a nation state. If we believe the narrative that we're being told and that are in the that's in the history books, it was, you know, a radical Muslim who was mostly funded by daddy and daddy's friends from Saudi, a Saudi Muslim, an Arab, who radicalized a bunch of more Arabs and a bunch of and trained and hid in the mountains of Afghanistan. It was not Afghanistan. It was not Iraq. It was not even Saudi Arabia. It was a ghost. It was a ghost. And America didn't know, doesn't know, still doesn't know how to tilt at windmills or how to fight ghosts. And so we said sick 'em, but there were ramifications in that. And the ramifications, as Morning Edition and on the media this morning echoed, the echoes, the tremors, the aftershocks have not completed. Welcome back. This is Season 3, Episode 1 of Chris Cast. My name is Chris Abraham. As I said in the previous segment, everybody from around the world emailed and called me from everywhere, from England, from France, from Finland, from Sweden, from Germany, from Hawaii, from around the world, and they felt the wound that was made by that day. They felt they were on our side. We had been like a bull in a china shop from 1950, 1945, until 2001. We had not been everybody's favorite nation. We had attacked Iraq in 1990-1991. We had I guess to fight against Saddam Hussein as they attacked Kuwait, to protect Kuwait against all the fake babies that were being dumped onto the floor. There's just a lot of lying and a lot of gamesmanship and a lot of heavy-handedness. Here comes a Arlington police officer. No, state trooper. Sorry about that. But I like sirens being part of this. It was amazing. The entire world were holding. Remember how when France was attacked by the gunman who attacked the comedy magazine. I forget even the name now. I mean, this it was the same kind of thing. Like if Twitter or Instagram or Facebook existed, the entire world would have put a background up. They would have put red, white, and blue, or they would have put an American flag, or they would have put the Twin Towers. Like, bona fide, the entire world felt not pity. They felt sympathy. They felt empathy. They didn't even think, and I guess this might have been what were in the minds of the people in charge. The people in charge might have been the kind of West Point graduate who feels like everything is a disrespect. They might have felt like it was pity, or that it was insulting, and how dare you, how dare they. But, you know, you can actually, what America needed at that point in our this was after, this was 10 years after the wall fell, Russia collapsed, Soviet Union collapsed and became Russia. This was, you know, 10 years after Eastern Germany fell. This was a decade. Like, there was a lot of opportunity for us to practice being soft, to practice being humble, to practice being human, to show that being America doesn't mean you're a psychopathic, sociopathic nuclear power who crushes anybody that is in its way, a global authoritarian superpower is not what we wanted to convey. We did such an amazing job under Clinton that maybe Bush didn't like that. And I know, like, Project for a New America and all these other places didn't like that. They didn't like that America was not cohesive. We were the people who were my age in their, you know, late 20s, early 30s, were all Gen Xers. Like, we had been trained to be snarky and sarcastic and disrespectful. And, you know, Bart Simpson is Gen X, man. That guy's no frickin' boomer, and that guy is no frickin' millennial. I know that you millennials think you're snarky, but you're actually little bunny rabbits. And you Z kids, you're baby bunny rabbits. But there weren't that many of us. And at the end of the day, we took all this goodwill and we squandered it. We squandered it in Guantanamo. We squandered it with the mistreatment of prisoners in Abu Ghraib. We squandered it with black sites around the world. We squandered it with a fake war in Iraq based on false claims and bad intelligence. We definitely, listen, honestly, throughout the 2000s after 9/11, there were so few people who ended up having to go to Afghanistan that nobody at all, most Americans, what is it that they say when you have a budget and there's like power and lights and rent and insurance? These are all like line items that are built, you know, into the budget. Well, that's what Afghanistan was. It was a line item built into the budget. Americans didn't think twice about Afghanistan. We thought a lot about it, Iraq. But Afghanistan was a totally forgotten war. It wasn't until Obama, when the right decided to go ahead and dunk on Obama being a droner in chief, that it really came out as to how much devastation and how many civilian deaths and how much destruction and all the terrible things. This was the we're at war in Afghanistan for the girls and the women You know, the women and girls thing periodically pops back like a herpes, but like I always say in all of my blog posts, what about the rural women? What about the rural girls? But that does not support a redefinition of democracy. You know, I like to tell everybody that democracy doesn't play favorites, but this democracy, whenever Americans talk about democracy, it only means enlightenment, liberal, justice-based democracy. And 100% of the time when democracy is given to a country, the reason why they say democracy is fragile is because they say that the truth is that curated democracy, in other words, democracy is fragile because cheating at cards is dangerous because you might get caught and shot. So in order to perpetuate a kind of democracy that always results with an Obama is tricky because sometimes a Trump shows up. And we learned, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago that the moment a people get democracy, they might go ahead and vote for a religious extremist or a mullah or they might choose a strongman, or they might choose whatever. I mean, in many ways, even though it's a different type of democracy, it's a parliamentary democracy. You know, Adolf Hitler was democratically elected. And so democracy is fragile if, by what you mean by democracy, is making sure that loaded dice always show up as sixes and not ones. You want sixes, and you want to do everything you can not to get snake eyes. And that's what I think they mean by democracy is fragile. It's fragile because the same democracy can vote in a Trump. It can vote in a George W. Bush. It can vote in a Richard Nixon. It can vote in whomever, right? I mean, personally, I think that I could give a fuck about retired Jimmy Carter. That guy doesn't have any real power anymore. I think that my favorite president of all time was the President Jimmy Carter. But I think that he did exactly what Joe Biden did yesterday or the day before. He scolded us. Americans don't vote for someone who scolds you. You can't scold an American and get away with it. You're not going to have a second term. Biden is not going to have a second term because he said the following. He said, we were patient about vaccinations, but our patience is wearing thin. And that is inexcusable to the American people. And in that case, democracy is fragile because that is going to be used against him for his entire life. Hey there, this is Chris Cass, Season 3, Episode 1. My name's Chris Abraham, and this morning I heard Scott Simon interview an Afghani border trader, T-R-A-D-E-R, and he says that the government during the American occupation of Afghanistan, all of the Afghani government officials were complete crooks. They were completely corrupted. They got grift on every sale. They got, they were completely black marketeers. They got grift on every sale. You had to pay everybody huge amounts of money because of the corruption. And he said now that the Taliban took over, there's no corruption at all. He said he's looking to for a future where his import-export business across the Afghan border is going to be so much more profitable because he doesn't have to pay bribe after bribe after bribe after bribe. So no matter how they want to paint the interim government during the last 20 years between actual governments, the occupied, I mean, it's like saying that Afghanistan, it's like saying that the occupied Japan was Japan's government, or occupied Germany was Germany's government, or occupied France was France's government. When you have a big dicked superpower occupying you, it's not the country's government, it's the occupying country's government. So, and when there are Galaxy C-17 Galaxy bellies loaded with $100 US bills, things get pretty corrupt. So despite what you think, also the Taliban does not support poppy fields in general. That's against Allah. So it's actually under the occupation by the United States when the poppy fields were being most utilized. My intel says that once the Taliban took over, they burned down all the poppy fields. So you can do your own research. You know, people love to say that. Do your own research. But under strict observance, poppies, drugs, opium, addiction, drugs, alcohol, etc. are against Muhammad, peace be upon him. So it's actually an anti-corruption government. It's oppressive. It's terrible to women. It's terrible to girls. It's not pro-Western thought. It is not the best place in the world, but here's the thing. Supposedly 100,000 people have been exfiltrated from Afghanistan, and all my stupid friends with their 150 plus IQs or their talking point memos tell me that, or even my freaking scary as shit lieutenant colonel retired buddy tells me that all these people who are being immigrated here, who are emigrating to America as refugees, are all the rural hick, dumb, rural hick, ignorant, yellow fever, liking little boys, kind of ignoramuses. Well, I don't agree. I believe we basically brain drained the most educated, exceptional, trained, feminist, woke, enlightened, experienced men and women and girls of the entire country. And I dare say that we did exactly what the Taliban wanted, which is to get rid of all the uppity ones. Nobody wants an uppity one. Nobody wants cancer in your new utopia. And anybody who's been remotely brainwashed by the American invader, all the pink and black faced people, are cancer that needs to be removed. They're never going to revert back to code, no matter how many re-education camps they're sent to, no matter how much restrictions. They'll never embrace the burqa anymore. So we've advanced. We really benefited from that brain drain. There's going to be 100,000 brilliant. It's like taking the creme de la creme. Same thing happened with Cambodians and Vietnamese and I believe even Cubans. I think that once you get too uppity in Cuba, it's time to jump on a boat and become a boat person towards Miami. And that's great. Like, it's exactly what Australia did. I mean, exactly what Great Britain did by getting rid of all of its garbage people and moving them to North America, and to Australia and to New Zealand, right? Get rid of the ne'er-do-well. Get rid of the people who are the protruding nails. It's much more handy. And it's also, in those people, there'll also be all the criminals, right? So of that 100,000, I would say there's really only 20,000. I would say 20,000 of those people are brilliant, brilliant, brilliant future contributors to American society and really, really regretful brain drain. But then there's probably 80% of corrupt criminals who took advantage of the situation and now are going to be able to move here. And if you're a corrupt criminal, you're probably going to do pretty well in America's capitalist system. You just need to choose banking instead of robbing. That's my recommendation. Hey there, Season 3, Episode 1. This is Chris Cass. My name is Chris Abraham. This morning on the Media, you should go check it out. There's a segment about loose change, is it called? The whole concept of 9/11 being a false flag event, an event like the Reichstag fire, like what they call... any number of other things. An event that will rally America against whatever you want to point it at. And it was funny because they did a really good review of all of those things. And I got to tell you, no matter where I've been in the world, whenever I run into someone from a Muslim country, all Islamic people that I've ever met, might even be, I should ask, my Moroccan friends. Everybody that I know who's from an Islamic country believes that 9/11 was an inside job perpetrated by, I mean, half of them say it was probably a Jewish thing, which I renounce, and the other half thinks it was some sort of neo-conservative type of deal. But that's a lot of people globally. And one thing that that Brooke Gladstone's replacement person talked about is that there are a lot more people that believe that America, that 9/11 was a false flag, was an inside job. There's a lot more like meat and potatoes Americans, a lot more Christian Americans, a lot more evangelical Americans, a lot more white, black, and Asian Americans, a lot of brown Americans, a lot of Muslim Americans that have always believed this and believe it today. And they were talking about how there is a direct link between the Reagan era support of the Mujahideen in the 80s, late 70s and early 80s, in terms of countermeasures against the Soviet Union invasion of Afghanistan in a proxy war against the Russians, that's the source of the aftershocks, the echoes, the ramifications, the long, long, long fuse that resulted in 9/11. And then the explosion is like the explosion of New Year's Chinese fireworks, where the where there's millions of little firecrackers that fire and fire and fire and fire and fire. And according to this one segment, there's a belief that there's a direct link between Reagan's behavior with regards to supplying Stinger missiles and resources to the mountain people known as the Mujahideen. There's a direct blood line all the way to January 6th. So just to let everybody know, January 6th is still the worst thing ever to happen to America, even though there were no guns and no bombs and no burning downs of anything and no no long rifles, no AR-15s, no Molotov cocktails, no pipe bombs, no hostage situations, no stabbings, no any of those things. It's still the worst thing ever to happen to America since Pearl Harbor and 9/11. But I think that, even though I think that's bullshit, I think it was just an awful, awful crime. I think it was like a riot plus breaking and entering plus a bunch of freaking scaredy cat little bitches who work for us and are not royalty. But that's controversial. Nothing happened. I mean, I think they should all go to jail, but I don't think they should go to Guantanamo. I think they should all go to jail, but I don't think they should go to a Polish black site. And I think they should go to jail, but they shouldn't go to jail for anything more than the crime that they committed. And it should not be a crime that's based on an attempted a self-coup? Is that like auto-erotic asphyxiation? But that's neither here nor there. The fact that Spike Lee was intimidated out of including even his belief when he was in his, you know, from 2001 to 2021, the fact that he was pressurized from even including the conspiracy theories about 9/11 that he believed, you know, what are some of them? Some of them include the fact that it had nothing to do with Muslims, that it was completely a gambit to get rid of files, B, a gambit to steal gold, C, as simple as wanting to. So right before the Twin Towers, the World Trade Center Twin Towers collapsed to the ground after being hit by two terrorist flights, the entire property was sold to a new owner, and the insurance was up to date and everything. It was completely right before, like this happens in arson, right? So right before everything happened, transferred to a new owner, and maybe that new owner couldn't figure out a way to raise the Twin Towers because of, you know, like maybe it was literally impossible to bring those Twin Towers down in Lower Manhattan without it was just impossible. It was you couldn't do it. Too many health regulations, too much money, too much expense, et cetera, et cetera. So there's all these things, like as simple as an insurance payout or a developer wanting to develop something new on that spot or something to do with destroying a bunch of documents or stealing a bunch of gold or hiding the fact that there wasn't gold in a vault. Like there's a million different theories, and so he couldn't mention any of them, and I must applaud on the media for at least going into some of them, because I think that, yeah, it's true. The bifurcation of America has never been greater, and it's more along the lines of rich and poor than it is along the lines of Trumpers and not Trumpers. Because I don't know, are there really 51% of Americans are Trumpers? You know, I don't know. I don't think so. But yeah, It'll be really interesting. And the next segment is going to be about the Patriot Act, so that'll be fun, right? So, how has America benefited after 9/11? We have so much security theater. We have so much actual security. The 9/11, man, it didn't, you know, all that hope and compassion that the... Oh, this is Season 3, Episode 1, Chris Cast. My name's Chris Abraham. Patriot Act, right? In so many ways, America has become a police state. And that really happened since 9/11. It was already starting to happen. I was a bike messenger in the early 2000s, and there were some, you know, there was metal detectors at the entrances of all the congressional and Senate office buildings and all the other buildings, but you can get in. You could get in as a biker. You could get in just show your permit. I mean, it was the people's house, right? You can go in and go to a senator's office. You could go in. You can go to the lunch area. You can eat lunch in the Senate office building. There was no restrictions, and you could do donuts in front of the White House, like right in front of the White House. You could drive right through there. It was part of Pennsylvania Avenue. I think it was part of Pennsylvania Avenue. You could do donuts in there. DC cops never cared, man. Nobody cared. DC cops didn't care. You could do anything that you wanted in the city. It was pretty great. But after September 11th, gates went up, TSA. You can't access any place. Streets were cut off. It was the new level, and I don't think I really trusted the media after that. I don't think I trusted mainstream media at all very much after that. I still read The New Yorker. I still read The Financial Times. In the early 2000s, I had a website that ended up becoming a crackpot conspiracy site, which was called memes.org or memespace.org, and that was pretty fun. But that's where I first came acquainted with the melting point of steel and the fact that the World Trade Center was completely had a metal exoskeleton and should not have collapsed the way it did, and all these other conspiracy theories. But the real ramifications happened with regards to all of the legislations that were that occurred after 9/11 happened in its wake, and it gave untold power to the president. We never used to have an executive branch that had such complete empowered oversight. The checks and balances were a lot more equal, co-equal. But 9/11 gave so many executive executive order, gave huge power to executive orders, gave huge powers to the NSA, the NRO, the DIA, the FBI, the CIA, gave huge power to the State Department. It gave huge power to expanding the technology, the oversight, the intelligence. I remember in the mid-2000s, they were even trying dirigibles above Washington. I mean, they don't even need those anymore because satellite tracking has become so good. But and ubiquitous, the panopticon is so good too. Most of it's security theater. Most of it has to do with keeping a boot on us. Like, this isn't even about keeping us safe from abroad. A lot of this money is being spent on keeping us safe from ourselves. In many ways, preparing for I don't know what. Preparing for a class warfare, I don't know. Preparing definitely for a future where the people of America are going to be more dangerous than America's foreign adversaries. So, doesn't bother me. I'm not in the intelligence world. In any way do I even remotely want to be what is it called? When you sacrifice yourself for something. Jesus was a martyr. So I'm not a martyr. In fact, I find everything so completely convenient. I love having GPS on my phone. I go into all my phones and make them as promiscuous as possible. I not only have an Amazon Alexa in my apartment, my little apartment, but I also have a Google at Home, and I have everything set up so that it just listens all the time. I never close the video or cover with a piece of tape of my phones or my laptops or my desktops. I completely benefit from the fact that America is basically a collarless police state. I won't even go into the number of people who are in prisons. I won't go into the people who are de facto wage slaves. I won't go into the kind of subservience you are when you are under crushing amounts of debt. Both medical, as well as credit card, as well as home, as well as indebtedness to a job, for reasons of health insurance, for reasons of chronic disease, in terms of coverage, and all these things. Because it won't matter anymore, because the big reset of the pandemic has changed all the rules. So it'll be interesting to see how everything coalesces together. So, has 9/11 made America a better place? For sure not. In fact, in the next 20 years, America's going to be spending so much time fighting itself that it'll be able to take a lot of pressure off of the 800 countries, or the 800, the countries where our 800 bases live, right? We're going to be spend so much money, so much time and energy fighting ourselves that will both take some pressure off other countries who we micromanage, but also we're probably not going to be having a lot of extra resources to fund them either, so they'll have to learn how to get on with themselves. The good news is that China's right there to pick up the slack. And the reason why developing countries love China is because the thing about America is we are incredibly moralistic. The bad news is that the moralism isn't even associated with the righteousness, the self-righteousness and hypocritical morality is not even based on Christianity anymore. And it's not based on Judaism. It's not based on Islam. It's based on a morality associated with justice. And it's justice, and justice is defined as whatever I think it is. It's not necessarily evenly spread. So it's perfectly okay it's not unjust to punch a Nazi, but it's not just a crime to punch anyone of color. So back in the day, if you punch someone of color, or you punch someone who is a minority, it would be a crime. But now, it's something much more. It is a hate crime is a racially motivated, gender motivated, LGBTQ plus motivated hate crime. So the concept of justice is tilted. It is not blind justice. It is thumb on the justice towards a type of future that looks a lot like Star Trek. But it is an impatient culture, and the impatient culture wants the future to look more like Star Trek, way more. In fact, I think that the future of America is going to be the kind of future that the way that that Singapore made their beautiful modern future, or the way Abu Dhabi or Dubai, they made their future. They made their future a gentle, beautiful place, as long as you're rich enough. I guess, you know, otherwise you live in sort of a hellhole where you have to take, you know, where you can't afford to do anything, and you're basically support structure for those rich people. That's basically what Star Wars is, right? There's a there's the people with their various and sundry ranks. It's a quasi-militaristic environment. And where are the poor people? Where are the homeless people? Where are the sick people? Where are the working people? Where are the people who are, you know, where are the people? What is it like back at Earth? How have they made the other look so decrepit and so ignorant and so terrible and so unsavable that they live under a rock? The future is going to be justice for all, asterisk. So as long as you're not a garbage person, and you don't get to say whether or not you're a garbage person, if you are defined as a deplorable, God save your soul. You better find someplace in Baja to live, or move to Afghanistan. I hear that that it's a pretty great place to live. Lots of hiking. Talk to you soon, guys. Bye-bye. Hey there, my name's Chris Abraham. This is Chris Cast. This is my Aloha and Mahalo. Pretty long episode, but it'll be fun to see how it sounds coming directly from the phone. The official name now is Chris Cast with Chris Abraham, or from Chris Abraham, or by Chris Abraham. You can reach me at Chris Abraham on Twitter, at Chris Abraham on Facebook, at Chris Abraham on YouTube, linkedin.com/in/Chris Abraham. ChrisAbraham.com. You can email me at chris@abraham.su. You can find me at anchor.fm/ChrisAbraham or any of the platforms. If you like me, please give me a review. Please give me 5 stars or any stars. Please share me on your social. Please comment. Please go to Apple Podcast and do all the same things there. I only have 3 subscribers on Podcast Addict, and I think technically I only have 19 listeners, and I hope to stay that way. So I guess only share it with your other crazy friends. Love you guys. If you want to talk to me on WhatsApp, on Signal, and on Telegram, I'm +1-202-352-5051. That is my cell phone, my only phone. But if you call me and I don't recognize the number, you're going to go to voicemail, which is Google Voice. Leave a message which will translate to text, email to me. Maybe I'll call you back. If you want to schedule a date to talk, go to calendly.com/Chris Abraham. And I guess on Snapchat, I might be Abraham CJ, and on, or Christopher J. Abraham. On TikTok, I don't know what I am on TikTok. I might be Christopher J. Abraham or Christopher Abraham. And that's it, I guess. Hasta luego. Hasta la próxima. Ciao. A demain. A bientôt. Au revoir. Auf Wiedersehen. A tout à l'heure. Ciao. Until next episode. Thank you.